Welcome to SB Pod. Snapper Steve is with us, kinda. Reporting from the. Well, I mean, you're with us, but you're not with me in studio. I went back to work last night. The big man's enjoying well-earned vacation down there, Outer Banks style. And Steve, I say vacation. Maybe we need a different word when it comes to traveling with young kids in the summertime. Because as my wife says, like, did you have fun? Was this a vacation? Not really. What is it?
Yeah, that's the greatest question. I've been thinking about it. I'm like, it's not vacation.
Nope.
Everybody's enjoying themselves. I get it.
Are you?
We go as long as we can at the beach. People that have to nap. And then it's pool time, home cooking. It's great. But it's not vacation.
No. Nope.
We need another word. There's a lot of times where, you know, the children are in control of what's going on. And it's not great because when they're in control, there's no rules.
There's no rules.
What do they say? The inmates run the asylum.
Yeah.
All on them. So we need a word.
Well, I mean, anybody out there with kids, you know.
Your peak, you host all your family at your house.
Yeah.
You know, in July. How many did you have in the house?
I don't know.
15?
It wasn't 20 this year. High teens.
Yeah,
you're entertaining.
We're at 17 here.
Oh yeah, and it's
and the kids outnumbered adults now.
Oh boy, we're lucky because our family we're drama free. Everybody gets along with everybody. Like you don't have that one dynamic where somebody doesn't like somebody, and then there's some history, and then it gets somebody has one too many.
If that's the case, you don't need to go on vacation with those people.
Some people try to, and then it's just one too many maker's marks, and then it's like, you know what you did. Like, oh God. Next morning at breakfast, just crickets. We're lucky we don't have any of that. But even so, it's still the laundry doesn't stop. The breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you gotta ask them what they want, gotta make it. They don't want to eat it, you know. Mm-hmm. And then they're just trying to get to bath and bed. I mean, it ain't a vacation.
So tomorrow night.
Here we go. Plans.
The house is going out to dinner. Do you have any advice?
Yeah, I would day drink tomorrow. Just take the edge off. Because then no matter how bad it goes, you just laugh. You'd be like, it's fine. 17, you're go walking in 17 strong?
17 strong, yep.
Like to a sit-down grown-up dinner?
Yeah. There's places down here that specialize in it. So
here's the thing. Make sure, call ahead. Make sure they got those placemats with the crayons that the kids can draw on.
Oh, yeah.
Got to have that. If they don't, just bring a box of crayons.
And they need Wi-Fi because the iPads might have to work, too.
that's always a tough one. Last year, though,
they were very good. We were in and out of there. They did a great job.
I'm old school in this one. I'm anti devices at the dinner table, because if you have a kid with a device at the dinner table, they don't participate. They just sit there like a zombie. There's no conversation.
Well, at a dinner of 17 at a restaurant, I'll allow it to keep them sane until the mac and cheese comes out.
After further review, ball was tipped at the line of scrimmage. There's no foul on the play. Enjoy your iPad, Libby. Enjoy. All right. Inmates running the asylum down at the beach. Yeah. We're back to work, kind of. I mean, we're just trying to keep it between the mustard, the mayonnaise, try not to screw it up. And then, you know, college football. We're going to talk to Bruce Feldman here in a bit. Fox Television and The Athletic. His freaks list is out. It's up to 100. It's great reading, good fun. What's the beak? What's the appetite for what's coming up in the season? If you're people like Steve and I, you don't need any warm ups. Don't need any appetizers, but you'll devour it anyway. So we'll talk some college football with Bruce here in a moment. I feel like I need to update our listeners on how we're doing here.
Dentist, how'd we do?
I described it the day of the extraction as it's like I ate a grenade. listen. Okay, am I a little dramatic when it comes to pain tolerance? I don't know. I don't know. We'll get to some pain that came later that night in a moment. I think I'm all right. I think I'm tougher than I might give myself credit for. I'm just going to tell you, it sucks, and it still does. All right, it hurts a lot. There are holes in my face. I don't know if we got a dry socket going. We're trying our best. It ain't easy to eat. I can only eat so much yogurt and applesauce before I'm just going to say, I don't care. Give me a bite of some steak. We'll cut it really small, and we'll just figure it out.
How's the Diet Cokes going now?
You're not supposed to have carbonated beverages.
Oh.
I'm doing it. It's probably set back my rehab. We're all going to die of something. Maybe I'm going to die from an infected dry socket because I got carbonated beverage swishing around in there. You got to pick a hill to die on. The Diet Coke's going to be emblazoned on the line. So be it. But it's you know, don't wait till you're middle-aged, you know? I mean, I put it off for a long time. It had to happen. And we got a Thursday follow-up just to see where we are, see if things are progressing. I don't know. It still hurts like there's holes in my head. I mean, like, when is it just – don't you have to go in there in, like, a pothole and fill it in with something? Like, what is just – I'm just going to wake up one day and my gums naturally going to have filled in? I'm questioning all of this.
You're questioning the process.
Not trusting it. I'm also derailing it with the soda. I don't think I'm a great patient is what I'm saying. And also, they gave
me... You were in college for as long as doctors, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Didn't get any... My roommate, though. Shout out to Joe B. Barrett Mass General. Guy's a doctor at Harvard.
Not you.
No, sir. I've been Googling a lot, though, trying to figure out what these symptoms are.
Oh, man.
My dentist said, hey, do me a favor. Stop Googling.
Yeah. Don't do the... What is that? WebMD? Come on. Yeah. You're better than that.
Yeah, it's. Well, am I?
Yes, you are.
No, not.
And
not,
you're smarter.
Not really.
Yeah, you are.
But I have a follow up to the surgery. I want to paint the picture for you.
Okay.
So this Thursday we get the teeth out. I was hopped up on the good stuff, and when I came out, I was just laughing, and I demanded they play go-go music. I don't recall that. My wife said, do you remember when you asked for go-go music? I said, I do not. She said, you're doing the beat on the wall. You're doing the go-go beat on the wall. I was like, and I'm giving it that go-go beat, little trouble phone for the people.
Hi.
Yeah. So good. I am fine. And the gal there, she showed me her phone. Her nephew's in a go-go band. Shout out to the lady at the dentist. I hope your nephew's go-go band's doing great. That night, again, hopped up on the goofy good stuff, the good pain meds. Wifey wakes me up 5 a.m. Hubby, what? Fire alarm, smoke detector's going off. That horrible chirp battery. I'm like, she's like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, I got it. So I go downstairs and I get the smoke detector. We take it down. I think we put it in the car at that point because it was like figuring out the battery. It just seemed like it was going to be a chore. So somewhere along the way, my wife, I think she said it sounded too loud to her. Again, she has bionic hearing. I can't hear. She says the crickets from the basement sounded way too loud. She goes downstairs, door in the basement, wide open. 5 a.m., door to the basement wide open. I'm hopped up on the goofy on the meds.
Still dark
outside? Yeah, the sun's not up yet. Oh. And we obviously have a madman in our house, and I have to arm myself, find that person, which I did. Now I'm wandering around the basement. I'm looking around. I don't see anybody. We got those cameras, got the Ring cameras. There's nothing on there. There's clearly nobody in the house. But again, I'm goofy on meds. It's 5 a.m. And you got to protect your family. And I'm walking around and I don't see anybody. And I look in this room. I look in that room. I look in the other room. We're good. But then I think, you know what? I got to check the utility room. All right. Go in the utility room. Looking around. I'm thinking in my head, like, what's going to happen if I see the, like, am I prepared to take action? Yeah, hell yeah. Don't start none, won't be none, right? But you're hoping that doesn't come to that. And then there's this crawl space area, Steve, that's, I'm 6'6". The crawl space is about chest high. It's a great place to hide presents around Christmas time.
Okay.
I've never actually been up in it, but we've got a couple of big, like, Home Depot style buckets set up there that you can step up on if you need to get back in there for presents. So I step up on the bucket. Buckets, two buckets, probably 4 feet in the air, 3 feet, whatever it is, it's up in the air. First bucket slips. I roll my ankle like Steph Curry in the against Boston. Like, foot just rolls flat over. Excruciating pain. I yell, I'm like, but I tried to eat the yell because my family's asleep. So it's like but again, even hopped up on the meds, having just rolled my ankle, there's a madman in the crawl space. He must be addressed.
Mm.
So we pull ourselves up heroically into the crawl space, which you can't, I can't stand, but I can kind of halfway stand. And again, I'm asking myself, what happens if I, what do I do? I don't know. We'll figure it out when we have to. It's at this point, Steve, that I look down and I think, apparently, I've severed a toe. I'm bleeding like a stuck pig.
Blood's God.
It's a crime scene. There's blood everywhere. Like,
have a day.
That ain't good. But again, can't stop really to address that because got to deal with a madman. I quickly assess the situation, realize there's nobody in here. What am I doing? We get down. I don't know if you're familiar with, like, if you dangle a limb that has a wound, the blood is just free flowing all over the place. Again, looks like the first 48 in our basement. And now I'm trying to stop the bleeding, which I do as I waddle into the bathroom. I thought, come to find out in the morning, wifey said, you left just footprints of blood all over the house. And it was when I got upstairs to survey the cut that I realized that I had like a smiley face across the length of my middle toe. Mm. I mean, it's cut wide open. And I think that ain't good. So we slap two or three Band-Aids on there and I go to bed because what am I going to go to the, we'll deal with it tomorrow. Yeah. Wake up in the morning, excruciating mouth pain because the goofy meds have worn off. Forgot that this thing had happened. My foot looked down and my foot's just covered in blood. I'm like, oh God, I did that. I forgot about that.
Right.
End up going to an urgent. Go to see my doctor who doesn't do the stitches so they can look at it to tell me, do I have to get the stitches? And the doctor takes the Band-Aids, plural, off the bottom of my foot, which during the time it took me to drive there had bled and like fused my foot to the bottom of a flip-flop. And she kind of like pushes my toe back, which makes the cut open wide like a mouth. And I want to quote the doctor. She says to me, oh my God. And I kind of lean in and I said, now, is that what you want to say to a patient who's got a wound on their foot? Oh my God. Cause that's kind of alarming. She's like, well, no, I just didn't expect it to be that deep. I'm like, well, no, but did you see the blood everywhere? I mean, this is, she's like, wow, no, you need stitches. No. I connected the dots on that. So then of course you've got to go to an urgent care, go to the urgent care. I tell the doctor there, yeah, the doctor who saw it screamed, oh my God. He's like, that's not good. She takes the Band-Aids off and she goes, oh wow. I said, you did the same thing. Oh, wow. And oh, my God, are the same thing. She goes, well, again, I just didn't think it was. I said, what did you expect at this point? I kind of prepared you for this. Long story short, we get 5 stitches in the toe, which think about your big toe. Like, how could you possibly need that many stitches? Well, if you almost severed it looking for a madman, hopped up on Percocet at 5 a.m, that's how you need 5 stitches. So that was, that was how Thursday went. Dad life. Fail. Do you have questions or is there just nothing to say?
No, I do have one question because everybody has this friend. Did you have a friend reach out to you in the last 2 days that knew that you were getting your wisdom teeth out that asked you if you had any of the meds left?
No, I didn't. No one asked me for the goofy good stuff. I'll tell you the truth, though. It's really nice. And there's one left. I only got like 2 days worth, but I said, you know what? I don't want to take it to the end. Real talk. I mean, did you see how this could become the kind of thing you lean on a little bit, right? Yeah, no, I'm not feeling great. Give me down the hatch. So we still got one left, break in case of emergency. But I have the referred pain. That's what it's called when the nerves are just rattling around the inside of your head. Teeth still hurt. Got the stitches in the toe. Drinking copious amounts of Diet Coke, which is derailing the...
Smoke alarms are good.
Yeah, we got the battery back in that, and we're off to the races.
Back to work, ready to go.
I was back on the set Monday night. And we'll be there all week as Steve's down there at the beach. Appreciate you working there, tapping into work with us here.
Need a break.
Well, let's lean into some content you're very familiar with. Let's talk some college football with one of the most respected voices and names in the sport. A buddy, former colleague, was with us at ESPN. Of course, you watch him now on Fox Television. You read him on The Athletic. His Freaks List is out. It is must reading. It's Bruce Feldman. Before we move on, a couple things that are going on at ESPN I'd like to mention. First, college football, as this podcast would attest to, is right around the corner. Stanford Steve and the Bear getting you ready for the season with preseason win total previews, tonnage of content. You will eat it up like ice cream that I've been eating with my wisdom teeth out. I like ice cream. You like college football. Good news there. Always college football with ESPN college football analyst Greg McElroy cranking out episodes 5 days a week throughout the college football season. So check out Stanford Steve and the Bear and Always College Football wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, you can watch all 7 episodes of The Captain, telling the story of Derek Jeter's life and Hall of Fame New York Yankees career. It is now streaming on ESPN+.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, it's about that time. Talk some college football. Welcome back. A friend for many, many years, Bruce Feldman, one of the very best in the college football beat. You see him on the sidelines on Fox Sports, read him on The Athletic. And it's that time of year where the college football freaks list is out, came out last week. This is must reading in the sports world. And Bruce, I want to start just with this. There's sort of a two-parter. Let's start with the first thing. How long has it been going on? Give folks the idea of the origin. And then I want to get to the second part, which is how it's exploded and morphed from there. But just for people that don't know the backstory, give us the Cliff's Notes.
Yeah, it's almost 20 years ago now, Scott. So when I was at ESPN...
That's nuts.
It is nuts. So when I was at ESPN, I was with ESPN Magazine, and the bosses had me and Buster Olney, our baseball writer, do blogs. And obviously baseball is a longer calendar, but at that point, the idea of thinking college football content was going to be year round seemed really crazy, right? There wasn't transfer portal like this. And, you know, it just was different, right? You might have had Spencer's, you know, Fulmer list of guys getting in trouble, but it wasn't much, you know, that way. And so I was always looking for ways to kind of keep content going, keep people interested. And I always thought of this workout warrior freaks list idea, and it was 10 guys. And, you know, people were pretty responsive to it and everything. And it was just kind of like a little bit of things I was really curious about. Right. And so over the next maybe 5 years, it became a thing, right? A little bit. But where I really noticed it take off about 7 years ago, I became a sideline reporter for Fox. And an hour or 2 hours before the game, when the only ones on the field are the players and the coaches, well, I would be down there just like a lot of other sideline people are, but also NFL scouts are down there. And I'd have these conversations where they would come up to me and would talk to me about the freaks list. And it kind of blew me away, where I was like, okay, people actually inside football care, and they're into it. And so over time, I started to reach out to them, and they became great resources for it. I would, you know, the other day, so Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl, he'd been doing it, you know, like for the last few years, but I'd have these long conference calls with the Senior Bowl staff, trading information and just kind of picking each other's brains on it. I mean, the other day I was on the phone with this was a couple of days before we ran it, with Jim from the Senior Bowl for like 2.5 hours on a Saturday morning. And it's just a great conversation because it really gets you going. It was, some of it was freaks list. Some of it was like, hey, these are players, you know, there's a couple guys that maybe we in the media think are really good, especially linemen. And then Jim will like kind of correct me, you know, in the conversation. And so it was interesting, but like there's players, I opened it up to non-FBS players too. You know, I'd never heard, there's a player from Quincy University. I'd never even heard of Quincy University till Jim mentioned this offensive lineman. You know, 3 hours later, I'm on the phone with, you know, having a conversation with his offensive line coach. You know, it's just kind of, that's how it was working. And I'm just kind of blown away by what it's become.
And it's become the Madden ranking of college football in that people are going to complain if they're not on it. I know Stanford Steve and I were out in College Park last week. We were at the Maryland practice. I think Steve's got a bone to pick about where Rock Jarrett is on the list. And I think, right, people are going to say, I mean, hey, you're glad you make the list. And every school that gets guys on it are putting out, hey, we had two on Feldman's freaks list. But then it's a question of, are you high enough on the list, right? I mean, it's become it's like not a bone of contention, but I think people, they got beef if they don't think they're high enough.
You know, it's funny on Jarrett, because at Big Ten Media Days in Indianapolis, like 2 or 3 weeks ago, he's on one side and I'm talking to him about his GPS time. And it's like, you know, this guy, as you know, was a huge recruit, but there was a reporter from the Baltimore Sun and then it was me. And so there's time to talk to him, and facing him, but probably like 40 feet or maybe, 40 feet on the other side of Lucas Oil Stadium is Ja'Corian Bennett. And sad that we didn't get to see him play Ohio State in our game, because you guys had no cornerbacks, and that's not the team you want to face. But he's like, I'm telling him what, you know, Jared told me. Yeah, he vertical jumped 41.2. He goes, but did he tell you who's the fastest one on the team? Because I did 22.9 on the GPS. I'm like, he said he did 22.9 last week. He goes, he did? And so it's like this back and forth contest. I'm like, all right, I'm going to have these guys right next to each other because they're about the same size. Obviously, they're both really good players. It's a little splitting hairs, but it was almost like the Brown twins from Illinois. I'm like, I'm not going to split these guys up. They're going to be basically the same person. I'll just skip. It's like 32 and 33 and they can decide who's really the freakier.
Bruce, the first list you did, wasn't it like 10 or 12 guys?
It was 10 or 12. I don't know if you're going to remember this name. At some point I'm going to get off my butt and do this story. So this is back when Bill Curry was working with us at ESPN. And I remember there was a name he had mentioned. It was a linebacker in the MAC named Turner Nande. And Turner Nande was like, maybe he was 215, but he could bench press like a small house and just was insanely athletic. And so at some point, like maybe a year or two ago, I Googled him and found his LinkedIn profile. And I think he played in the CFL. And I don't even know if he knows he was ever number one on my list. You know, back in that, you know, in that era, you had, you know, the freak of all freaks, Calvin Johnson. You had Adrian Peterson. You had the tight end from Maryland who was like Vernon Davis, who was ridiculous. So we, you know, had a bunch of them. But then it was like part of it was you had some of these guys who were like, this is after Dan Kendra, but there was still some freak stuff where you'd have these like crazy little things that I'm like, I got to find a way to include this. Some of these guys were great football players. Some of them were not. I always came away a few years later. Taylor Mays, you know, obviously was a big, big name at USC.
Player.
Yeah. And he was just a little stiff, but I was like, yeah, maybe Taylor Mays would be a great bobsledder, right? You know, some of these guys, because they'd be super strong and explosive, but maybe it didn't translate quite as well on the football field, at least in terms of the NFL.
Steve, I have a question for you. Are there enough tight ends on the list?
No. Bull, Bruce. I got five here. I got Kuntz, Musgrave, Bowers, Wiley, and Warren. Like, come on. They're the biggest freaks on the field. We need more love for the tight ends. Our mentality is not to sell ourselves. We get caught in this, but there are tight ends being hosed on this list.
You know, your boy who leans on Felica for all his tips in Saratoga had the freak of all freaks at tight end. The kid was 6'6", 275, the biggest hands. If he ever gets to the combine, the biggest hands in the history of the combine. But he's not, I don't think he's still with the program anymore. So I lost one there. And But like, look, Penn State's had a bunch of these dudes. And so, you know, like they had Gesicki a few years ago. And then this kid who ended up following Ricky Ronnie to ODU, Zach Kuntz. So he's like, I was like, all right, he's 6'8", which means he's probably not much taller than you. Maybe 6'6" and a shade. Well, Ricky Ronnie swears he's 6'8" and a quarter and he vertical jumps 40 inches. Mm-hmm. Like, that's insane, you know, to see what this guy's doing. So I wanted to at least have him in the top 10.
I got you. I watched him in the bowl game. He's an impressive dude, but I just thought Michael Mayer would be on the list. He's the best tight end in college football. My goal is to get him to New York for the Heisman this year. He's going to catch 100 balls. He's the freak of all freaks. Cause you mentioned it with Brock Bowers, like that tight end room at Georgia is insane when they come out on the field against Oregon, like people are going to be like, oh, wow, they had all these guys drafted. He wasn't one of them. Washington wasn't one of them. And then they're going to add Gilbert. Like, those guys are going to be the most impressive-looking group in college football.
Yeah, and Oscar Delp, if that's your fourth freshman. Man, I mean, that's insane, right? You know, and it's like, especially, like, for Notre Dame, I think it's a little different where, obviously, we're going to see them in Ohio State week one, but they don't have a lot of receivers. I think they're down to five scholarship receivers. So, you know, Tyler Buckner's best friend is going to be Mayer, and we'll see how much damage he can do.
Do you have a favorite, Bruce, through the years? I mean, and this is like asking a parent, you know, to pick a child. I get that. But I mean, there's the points you make about whether someone actually the physical traits translate on field or not. Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but is through the years, just somebody that just something they're quirky, as something esoteric about the personality, whatever the case may be, and maybe there's a group, but I mean, I just wonder with many players who they'd be.
Yeah, there's a couple. The first one is Owen Schmidt. Like, you know, you've seen the videos of him smashing his head. We actually did a story on him at the magazine where we did it as a comic book treatment. Because Owen was like his story is like a comic book character, right? And, you know, the strength coach who used to be there and then went to Michigan, Mike Barr, was, you know, the quintessential strength coach guy. But he was like, he would describe him as a mutant, not as a freak, but as a mutant. And just the stories of Owen were so, you know, he was a comic book character, right? And
he bled very willingly for those that aren't familiar. I mean, it was sort of if he was part of the ethos of the playing. He needed to be bleeding, preferably hemorrhaging from that cut in the middle of his forehead.
He in a lot of ways embodied. There's two parts of the coin of Rich Rod, West Virginia. He was on one side of the coin, and McAfee was on the other. And it's why we love West Virginia. If you're a college football person. And if you've never been, go, you know, like it's just, and those
well said, well said.
Yeah. You know, I was a Margus Hunt was a good one for me. He was like this shot putter discus guy from Estonia who played at SMU. And when I put his numbers out and I got him from, you know, one of the track coaches there, people were like, there's no way this is true. Well, then Margus Hunt went to the combine and he almost matched it to the hundredths of a second. Right. So that was another big one. And then the last one, I think, was just last year, Tariq Woolen from UTSA. So Jeff Traylor, the head coach there, we were back and forth. And he said, he was telling me the numbers and he was like, when is this running? Cause I think in the back of his head, he was afraid. I put this out there too early and people are going to poach the kid with the 6'4" cornerback who broad jumps like 11'5" and did it at the combine.
That's the triangle of toughness. We know all about the Roadrunners down there, don't we, Steve?
Absolutely. 2-1-0. Bruce, moving this forward with big picture, you got Arian Smith, receiver at Georgia at 39, and Tyler Harrell at 43, who's transferred from Louisville to Alabama. Now, talking to people at Georgia, they think Arian Smith's the fastest guy in college football. And then I look at Harrell as a guy, he averaged 29 yards a catch at Louisville, and we know what Nick has done. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be Jameson Williams. Like, that's his own tier, I think. But between those two guys, I think they're both going to make the playoff. Who do you think has a bigger impact on the season?
You know, I think Tyler will. Because of, honestly, I think Saban's going to be more inclined to keep it open. Whereas I don't know if, you know, Munkin's got these tight ends. I don't think Kirby is going to want to be as open with it. And if he can give the stretch the field part that Jameson Williams, I think, brought even more stuff. And I'm not sure Tyler Harrell can bring everything. I don't think he can. But look, he's got Burton. He's got other guys there. He's also got the Morris, you know, he's got probably the better quarterback. No knock on Stetson Bennett. We're talking about the Heisman guy. Mm-hmm. But to me, when you had, like, Scott Satterfield has been around a lot of fast dudes at Louisville, certainly at App State, even before that when he, you know, I think he had T.Y. Hilton that when he was
at FIU.
Coordinator. And for him to say, this is the fastest guy I've ever timed, this is the fastest guy I've ever seen, that's a mouthful. You just usually don't say that or hear that. But I mean, as fast as we're talking about, like, there's another SEC guy on the list, A-Chain from A&M, who's another legit track guy. I mean, they're fun. They're just all fun players to watch.
So check out the freaks list. It's grown from 10 or 12 to what now 100, and people are lobbying to be included, and it's fodder for conversation on sidelines, and anybody that loves not just the sport, but sports in general, I think it's great fun to read. And the sport itself is basically a week away. You know, we got week zero next week, which isn't the full fledged, but it's enough, right? It's enough of an appetizer. And then we're, you know, up to our eyeballs in it the following weekend, and just an opportunity to talk the sport with you is always fun. And I just wonder, Bruce, from a just sort of the state of the sport, before I get into teams, between name, image, and likeness and the portal, it's never been easier to, if you're a high-level program, and USC is the team I'm thinking of, to go out and assemble something quickly. And USC was bad last year, all right? Like, they weren't bad for USC. They're bad. They get up 60-something to UCLA. I mean, they couldn't stop anybody at the end of the year. And now they're ranked in the top 15. Whether they're that good, I don't know. But I just wonder what USC is the program I think most of in terms of the ability to go out, bring in Lincoln Riley, get Caleb Williams, among others. And quickly you can change things. Do those two things combined, portal plus NIL, make the sport as difficult to handicap going into a year as we've seen? Because you just don't know what people will be as they assemble all these pieces on the fly.
Yeah, I think the portal part is more the wild card. The NIL component, where I think it's a bigger challenge, is for the kids who are in high school who now, going into their senior year, have a lot of money. Or have money when they've never had it before. And how do they deal with it? I mean, I know you follow recruiting as much as anybody, you know, on TV. And if you look back at, like, the last 10 years of five-star quarterbacks, I went back and I'd say the hit rate on them, of them close to living up to their expectations, was about 30%. And that's before the big money. We know there's quarterbacks. Now, whether the dollar figure is exactly what it's been reported, it's still an insane amount of money for, you know, kids to be getting at this stage, where they're going to have all this other stuff's coming with them. I'm not saying that it's a terrible thing. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's a lot different. So now it's going to be harder for people, not just for them, but everybody around them to manage. And I think that is going to make it harder. The portal part, which I, you know, I think is interesting. Roster management is never going to be harder for coaches to deal with, but you're right. I mean, USC, that's the worst USC team. We did the UCLA game. I had never seen them look so bad in almost 20 years living here. They'll be really good on offense. I don't know how good Alex Grinch's defense will get, because they were horrible last year.
Horrible.
They took guys in the portal, but they did not. And some of them are pretty good players, but they didn't, you know, it's not like Jordan Addison is on the other side of the ball. It's not like Caleb is on the other side of the ball. Mm-hmm. So,
right. They scored 33, I think, against UCLA and almost got doubled up. So the problem when scoring the ball was just stopping the other team. But I want to follow just on the idea of the recruiting and the portal, because what's different is as good, and you make the point well, the hit rate on a five-star is not that great, okay? You get the world lines up at your door, tells you you're great, you get your butt kissed, and now you're getting seven figures, good luck. I mean, you're going to have to be wired a certain way to be willing to do the work to not think you've already made it. And God bless them for getting the money, they should, but it's going to be difficult, I think, to maintain, you know, the mentality that you need to get to the next level and the real money. But I think the portal, like you get it. Addison was a three-star recruit coming out of like Frederick, Maryland when he went to Pitt. Now he's a Biletnikoff winner. So my hit rate on that guy, like I can be pretty confident he's going to line up and he's going to be a gobbler. He's going to be a pass catching force from the jump. I'm getting made guys. I'm getting people that are going to contribute because they've done it. They know what it is to show up on time. They know what it is to practice. They know what it is to stay eligible, do their schoolwork. They know all of that already. So I think that your ability to put a roster together quickly and turn things on a dime, which Lincoln Riley's trying to do at SC, among others, is a hell of a lot easier to do that way, even though USC's recruiting at an uber high level high school wise. Give me the men. Give me the 22-year-olds that have shown they can do it on the field. And I think that's going to give you a much more direct avenue to being who you want to be. Do you feel the same?
I do. Now there's a flip side to this. And if you go ask Jeff Collins. Now he's a further, you know, he's a couple of years into this at Georgia Tech, right. But the best player in his program is like the guy you want to build around who could be a Heisman Trophy winner, but not there. He left to go to Alabama. It's like, if you don't get traction early, I think that you could circle the drain faster because your really good players are going to go, why do I want to stay around and be 6-6 at best or something when I can go there and I'm a showcase guy, they have a need, I can reevaluate. It's not like Jamar Gibbs didn't have a lot of really good options out of high school. I just think there's, you know, Addison is a situation there, you know, best receiver in the country, the Biletnikoff award winner, decided, hey, I'm going to take my chances over there. He was on a team that they won the ACC last year, you know, sure. It's a really interesting dynamic. And I think if you're on the, you know, like, you know how this is, when schools, coaches, staffs get there, they usually recruit pretty well. And then the challenge is when they start losing some games, do those kids stay committed or they bail for the bigger brands? In, you know, in Lincoln Riley and USC's case, I think there is so much energy around USC because they've been such a mess for so long. Not all Clay Helton's fault. He was kind of dead man walking for 3 years, which is an insane amount of time for a college football coach. But now between Caleb coming with him, Jordan Addison then coming later, and the Big Ten news, it's like a complete 180. Now, I think people are going to get over their skis about the USC hype for 2022 just because the expectations are going to be insane, and they are. But I think in all, kids are going to buy into that because they feel the excitement. And USC in a big market with a lot of celebrity aspect of it, they have something they can sell now.
I agree. One last thing on just the idea of losing your top players. And this is something you tweeted about. And it's the guy on your freaks list at Maryland, Rock Jarrett, that Steve and I saw last week. He's a five-star coming out. And everybody tried to poach him this offseason. And I saw him at practice. I said, hey, man, Terp fans are happy you stuck around. He said, hey, I had to do it. I said, no, you didn't have to do it, but you did. And that's, you know, look, kids have to make decisions. But it's incredibly difficult now if you're that guy because you become a de facto free agent. It's that second level of recruiting. And you're getting made guys, people that you know can already do it. It makes it just a fascinating layer to it.
Yeah. And I don't even know if it's a de facto free agent. It's just a free agent. Like,
yeah, you're right.
When I talked to him a couple of weeks ago, you know, he didn't specifically say which two schools, but he said there were like two top five SEC schools. I can kind of do the math on what that probably is. Yeah. He was committed to LSU, turned down LSU, which I don't know if he did it right before they won a national title, but it was in that window, you know, and to his credit, I think, you know, when he talked about it, it was, because I haven't fulfilled what I, you know, is like his feeling for Mike Locksley and his respect, admiration, you could, you know, was like, it's a little different than what sometimes you see players, you know. It was like, it's, I'm not saying it was because he's a home, he's a local kid, but especially because of how he feels about the head coach. And sometimes you don't hear that.
And it's the Stephon Diggs model, who famously said, you know, he stuck around, could have gone anywhere. And, you know, look, he went in the fifth round because of a whole other different reason who the quarterback was at the time. But I think he got the bag, obviously, with Buffalo. So I think this is very specific to Maryland fans that are like nod their head going, yeah. But it's rare, because I think you know, I don't blame Addison for going. Most kids would do what he did. Steve, I'm jeopardizing the conversation. I apologize.
Bruce, I need a team that has not made the playoff in the history of the playoff that you would feel confident that could make the playoff this year.
That's a big ask. I like, there's two schools.
You were going to say it's a great question.
It is a great question. That's all you do. But like, so there's two schools that I really like that I feel like are undervalued, right? Mm-hmm. One is NC State. They have a really good quarterback in Devin Leary. Now there's a bunch of good quarterbacks in that league, but yeah, he's really good. And I think, you know, Alabama, maybe aside, they have the best group of linebackers. Peyton Wilson's back. He's a fantastic player. They already had good linebackers. He missed pretty much all of last year. I think they're really, really good. I don't know if I would say they're playoff good, but I think they're, you know, because they lost Dickey, they lost their running backs, but I still think they're really good. The other team that I think has a chance to be kind of like Cincinnati last year, same conference, is Houston. Dana's quarterback, Clayton Tune, now has more than Tank Dell. He has a bunch of receivers. He's really good. And I think they have, some tricky road games early. They got to play the Roadrunners on the road. They got to play in Lubbock, which obviously Dana's had a drink or two in that city. But they...
Why has it got to be a drink, Feldman?
Come on, he's the best, right?
And yes.
And, you know, he's hoisted that, whatever that statue is that they won from the bowl game and rode with it on the plane. I feel like this has a chance. This team has a chance to be a top 10 team. Can they be a playoff team? I don't know. His DC is really good, Doug Belk, and he turned down a bunch of money to go to other places, to go to Power Five schools. People really wanted him. He's still there. And they have a lot of firepower now. I think they have a real chance to be undefeated, and we'll see where that takes them.
I can't imagine the party that Houston would have if he took that team to the playoff. That's a big city. That'd be a lot of places partying, man.
It would be at his house is where it would be. He digs it. He loves the Houston gig. Go ahead.
I think when you're talking groupings, Bruce, I think the Clemson defensive line is the best unit in the whole sport. And when I say that, I'm like, you know, Ohio State wide receivers. I think LSU has a great room of wide receivers. Auburn running backs. You know, when you think along those lines. Yes,
Georgia tight ends.
Yeah. I think Clemson's defensive line is the best when you look at their talent and the impact they're going to have on games. Do you think it's enough, that group, to can they do that? I don't know how – Do you think they're sustainable enough to lead them to a playoff? How good they were last year without Percy, like everybody just feels like a switch is going to turn. Do you see that?
I think they can be dominant. Here's the thing I don't have much of a feel for. You know, last year Dabo lost two really good coordinators who were integral. Certainly Tony Elliott on offense, but you know, Brent Venables was one of the, I don't know how to say it just without saying it. He was such a good defense coordinator, so aggressive, and he would have a feel for what other teams are going to call and would be on their stuff fast, right?
What are you trying to say? That he knew the plays and they had scouts with binoculars and they figured out the play calls?
Minds. Yeah.
And Ohio State figured out how to get rid of that by huddling up and they smashed him? Is that what you're trying to say?
He was like, look, I think he had a good feel for what's going on. And I think he's had guys on his staff who have been connected with him, who just have a good sense for that kind of thing. He's aggressive. And look, you know, you go back, I don't want to take you down another road, but you go back into the Joe Burrow, LSU, you know, greatest offense, whatever. There's a play in there where not only are they up 10, but at one point, Joe Burrow looks like he's going to throw a pick six where Nolan Turner, one of the safeties, jumps it, just doesn't catch the ball. It might be a different game then, right? And I just feel like without him, I don't know how well it's going to, I'm not saying that the new DC won't get it done, but I just feel like that's a big question mark. And the other thing is, you know, is DJ going to be the guy who he looked like, or is Klubnik going to come in there? I saw Klubnik in Elite 11. I was like, man, I think this guy's going to be really, really good. I just don't know if he's going to be the next guy, or does DJ keep developing? And I don't know the answer to that.
I want to make it clear to both Coach Venables and Clemson fans, and now OU fans, I'm not knocking the guy if he figured out how to steal plays, because it's part of it. If you can figure out, it's just like baseball. If your signs can be stolen, come up with better signs. No one's knocking it, but everybody in the sport knew what it was. And Ohio State specifically game planned for that when they faced him, which was smart.
Put the Colts' old O-line coach in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was the master. Go ask anybody who's been on that team about him, like, cracking codes.
Brewski would be screaming at him during the games because they figured it out from series to series.
They changed wristbands.
That had to do it. Look, it's all part of the game. Bruce, a team that is supposed to be good, presumed to be good, ranked to be good, that you believe is the gigantic mystery. You might have just answered it with Clemson, but who do you feel like is a mystery that is by ranking presumed to be good?
You know, I'm very curious to see what Oregon is like this year, right? Because Mario has a bunch of dudes that he recruited there, and Dan Lanning attitude, he got Christian Gonzalez, who is like one of my freaks list guys. He transferred from CU, but you know, I feel like we're like offensively, I'm not sure. Like Mario thought their O-line was going to be really good. And look, he knows more about O-line certainly than I do, but you know, we're Bo Nix is now probably is the guy. There's some good Bo Nix and there's some not so good Bo Nix, right? And you know, they got a tough opener out of the gate in Georgia, right? And I know Dan Lanning knows that operation, everything. I'm very interested to see what they look like, just because new staff, you know, you got Kenny Dillingham, who is a really sharp guy, but he's really never called it like he's going to be the, you know, you're with a defensive minded head coach. It's not like you got Mike Norvell there or whatnot. You got Nix, a new situation. That's one I'm a little unsure of, to be perfectly honest. Like that one, I would be like, I don't know if I'd put all my money on them at this point.
I think any team can win that division. I really do. We've texted Bruce about how open that Pac-12 North is. There's so much unknown and new teams, new quarterbacks, well, all that.
Now it's everything. Like it's the whole, you know, we're not in the North South anymore. And we got to, like, you know, it's like, so now they're in with Utah and USC and UCLA. Cause I think, like you said, those old North teams, you know, maybe, I hate to say this looking at your face, but maybe Cal, maybe Jack Plummer's going to get it going. Or, you know, I don't know. You know, like I think Wazoo can be pretty good, but like, you know, Washington is, I don't know if it's a major rebuild, but like that was one I got wrong. I thought Jimmy Lake was going to get it cranked up and it went the other way. And so, you know, like I could think by process of elimination, what the recruiting rankings tell us, that Oregon's going to be really, really good. And I don't think that, you know, I don't think they play USC in the regular season.
No.
So, you know, I could see why people are high on them. I just think there's too many unknowns right now. You know, do you get the Bo Nix who gave LSU fits, or do you get the other Bo Nix? I don't know.
Texas, Sark, all the offensive talent in the world, I think. A lot is going to be on Ewers plate. And then they have that beast of a game where you've seen it. I mean, I remember you writing articles about this, you know, what happens to teams after, you know, not only the week after they play Alabama, but how does it carry out? And when you have this amount of youth on a team, and I mean, you talk to people there, I talk to people there, they love the skill that they have. Now they're probably going to have to play three offensive linemen that are true freshmen at some point. Hopefully it's not against Alabama is the way I'm hearing things, but I look at it. And if they could get out of, like, I think about the Texas game that with Herman against Joe Burrow, like they were left for dead at halftime and they fought back, clawed back. And then they just couldn't get over the hump after that. There should be a lot of expectations with Sark, and I think the Big 12 is gettable this year. And I know people just want to keep talking about last year and losing to Kansas. Like, that team was humbled, man. Like they had a rough offseason and found themselves. Like I see them possibly having a double digit win season, even with the game against Alabama.
I'm like, they got some bad injury news. You got a really a good compliment. I think, you know, to Xavier Worthy, it goes down in Isaiah Nair. And then you also lose a 3-year starter at guard. And I think what really hurts on that is the thing you said, which I agree with. I don't think, you know, I've heard great things about the O-line class. I don't know if you want them having to play in that situation. It's going to be steamy hot there. You're going to have Alabama with like cordwood in the front seven of guys coming after you. Mm-hmm. You have a quarterback who, I guess, I don't know. I guess he's a sophomore. I don't even know what to say.
I don't know how to classify
him. I know the other kid can move around, you know, well. I just don't know if you put Card back out there. I know they got a great running back, and I know, you know, they got, you know, Roshan Johnson's a good piece of an X factor guy to, you know, he can run, he can do a lot of stuff for you. I agree. I think the challenge for them is if you can get it a game deep into the second half, meaning like as long as it's not a blowout, if you're down two touchdowns and then all of a sudden Alabama gets the ball and now they're up three touchdowns at the start of the second half, and then they just start pounding you, which I think Saban could do. And I think he knows how good of a play caller Sark is. And then he's just, hey, we're just going to wear on you. And then, you know, there's my body blows, you know, story. Like, how much of an effect does that have on that young Texas team and young Texas program going forward? Because there are programs that don't end up coming back from that for the rest of the year. They learn from it, but it just takes too much of a toll. And I think that's going to be a really interesting to see. I mean, I'm glad that's a game I'm going to be at. I can't wait to see the atmosphere for it. But man, you got one team that is, you know, aside from like Bijan, you have a lot of guys at Texas who I don't think are ready for that party yet.
Nothing's easier in college football to manufacture than optimism, and nothing's more fragile. And Alabama will take a sledgehammer to your confidence and shatter it, man. That Texas is fascinating. Look, the whole sport's fascinating just because there's been such upheaval. I had a list here. I just was jotting it down just haphazardly, and I'm like shaking my head as I look at it. LSU, Texas, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, USC, Florida. That's just a partial list of jobs, Bruce, in a year. In the last 2 years that have come open. I mean, these are the biggest names in the sport, and there's just change in between the NIL and, you know, the portal. It feels more. And then there's the fact that we're not going to have the Big Ten in a couple of years. It just feels like the ground under your feet these days in this sport is shifts. And that feels weird, but like week one, I don't care because, you know, like Utah goes to Florida. That's the game that I haven't heard anybody talk about. And I just think, can you imagine how fun that is? Speaking of coaching changes, Napier is his first gig. Utah's the top 10 team. They're not afraid of anybody. They'll come across the country. We'll go to the swamp at night. Or actually, where is that game? Is that game in Gainesville?
Yeah, it's at the swamp.
Yeah.
Right.
So, okay. Like, fine. Like, is it going to be hot and humid? That's fine. We'll drive on a bus. We don't give a f-. We'll play you. I mean, the sport feels weird and feels kind of icky at times. And then I think about that 4-hour window at 7 o'clock on the third, and I'm like, God, how good is that going to be?
I got a game that's like, I'm not saying it's off the radar, but it's like it's an NIL-ish game, and it's a portal game, but it's a great rivalry, and there's a lot of change to it, and I can't wait for Backyard Brawl. You have JT Daniels with his old OC, and you know, you got Keaton Slovis on the opposite side of his old OC, you know, Graham Harrell in it. You know, there's no Addison, but you know, the most don't give a f- guy in the business other than maybe Dana is Narduzzi over there. Yeah. And like, I can't wait for that game. Like, yeah. I just think like I got goosebumps talking about Backyard Brawl, and it's not like it's a top 10 matchup, but I remembered as a kid, you know, like how good, you know, like those programs have been. And I just think we don't know what we're going to get. Right. You know, like I have a decent idea what I think we're going to get when Ohio State plays Notre Dame at that point in Columbus. The Backyard Brawl, I can't wait to see, right? You know, I mean, you got the two former USC quarterbacks. It's like, that's the thing where if you're a college football fan, and we've had a lot of stuff to talk about of, you know, NIL and conference realignment and all that stuff is legitimate. Yep. But just the actual games to get into it, like, I mean, I can't wait for the start of it just because there's so much unknowns. As you said, you know, Brian Kelly in the SEC, we've talked a lot about his accent. The guy's still a really, really good coach, right?
And agreed.
You know, you got Brent Venables and all of a sudden Dylan Gabriel, who almost was at UCLA. Now he's there with his old OC. I'm pretty sure they're going to be really good on offense, right? Yeah. And there's just so many little, not even little, so many unknowns, reasons to buy in, and just really even more than reasons for optimism, reasons for intrigue. Like, I'm very curious to see, you know, I was thinking, oh, maybe Michigan was, you know, that was, I don't want to say I thought it was fluky last year. So I spent a bunch of time talking to Jim Harbaugh and some of his players. And then you listen to him, you're like, you know what? This team has a bigger chip on its shoulder than it did a year ago. Because everybody thinks it's a fluke. And, you know, it's not like they don't have players, you know, so it's just, there's so many different things to love about college football at this time of year. That it just can't get here soon enough.
It's like candy. It might not be good for you. You don't want to look at the ingredients, but I want to eat a bucket of it. You know what I mean, Steve? Just all of it. You what flavor do you want? I don't care. Give me all of it. I'll eat one of each.
Well, this the other thing the sport does, and I don't know how many years ago this was. Maybe it was 7 years ago. It's to me in my head, as I'm biased because he's my guy, but like, this is the Joe Test game. Texas is playing Notre Dame. It's a fantastic game. Now, it turned out neither team was very good. And
nope.
There's a mortifying clip from Joe Test. You know, Texas is back. Selling it as well as Joe Test, as anybody can sell it. It didn't suck the life out of what we experienced watching that game. Like, I didn't go to Texas. I don't have any connections to that game other than I just was like entertained for 4 hours. And it's rare that a sport can do that where you have a connection to it, but you don't have, you know, like maybe it may not mean anything 2 months from now because neither team, there could be injury, something, you know, it just, they're not as good. We don't know how good these teams are, but at the end of the day, like, man, it can entertain us and take us to places that I don't know any other sport can quite do that in this like little sprint of a 3 month season.
Perfectly said. Steve, you got anything else to close with?
No, Bruce got me all fired up. Where are you at week one, Bruce?
I am in studio week one. Week two, if we're calling it that, is I'm in Austin with Texas and Alabama. Can't wait.
Wow.
It's as good as there is in the sport. Nobody, as you clearly know, knows it better. Stanford Steve has one more big finger.
Yeah, how many shirts will you go through that day?
Too many. Too many. I got to admit, like, my biggest takeaway from, like, that I didn't realize as a sideline reporter, there was, like, two things. One, if I ask a stupid question post-game as a sports writer, almost nobody knows. If I ask it, it was bad. And you cringe. Somewhere there's god-awful video of me and poor Nate Stanley, and I'm kind of meandering my way through a thought, and he's just looking at me like he's seen a ghost. And then you're out there for 7 hours straight. Like, you know, you're on the field for 2.5 hours beforehand, then you stay out there. And so, like, I know our buddy Kirk is a big sweater. Like, I'm right there with him. You know, I'm just not on camera in HD all the time, but there's definitely some,
get yourself a whatever brand it is, undershirt, like Under Armour, Nike, Adidas, I don't care. I'll keep going. Whatever outfitter you want, put that same color shirt as your dress shirt. Put it on underneath. It'll soak up the sweat. You'll be fine. Hey, yeah, it's hotter, but at least it soaks up the sweat.
We got, you know, you're watching it in our green room, and I saw Dusty did a game. They cut to him at halftime, and it was like Norm from Cheers, the pits he had on. And it's not like Dusty's like in good shape still, but it's like that time of year, you're not supposed to be dressed like a grown up. Like, God doesn't want that. He wants you in a t-shirt.
Well, we're flip flops. You'll be fine, man. Bruce Feldman, check out the Freaks List. Check him out all season long on Fox Television. Great to catch up. We appreciate you being gracious with your time. We know you're busy, and we'll be reading and watching all season long, brother. Be good.
Great seeing you guys. Hopefully I'll see you on the road.
Now I know why your podcast with the Bear was 19 hours on the ACC, and you didn't mention Pitt last year. Feldman knows the sport forwards and backwards, as you do. But I mean, there's a little, I mean, you talk about inside the beltway. He's inside the beltway.
Yeah, he has contacts.
Coordinators and this and that.
I mean, up and down the list. Insane, his contact list.
But the problem, slash challenge is that talking about the sport when you love it, which we do, is, and you're so fired up right now that you just can't, you can barely police yourself. I can't, but that I started talking about that Utah Florida game. Like,
yeah.
When we were thinking about having Feldman, I just started thinking about that. Like, that's the Napier era starts. You're feeling a little bit down. You're Florida, right? You're worried about recruiting. Georgia's got a title now. You're like, man, where do we fit in over here?
Mm-hmm.
You open against a team who is fearless. Okay. Like, they're the team, they want you to hit them in the head with a snow shovel so they can go, yeah, come on, do it again. Look at Utah at the end of last year. They beat the crap out of Oregon twice. They traded punches with US, with Ohio State in that amazing Rose Bowl game. And they're ranked top 10. And they're on the road in the swamp at night. I mean, and that's just a tiny little snapshot. That's 1 3-hour window.
You're going to have Florida.
For the limit. For the limit. But it's going to be painful. I don't want to do it, but I kind of have to. Kind of have to do it. Right? Winners, week one. Can you hear Trombone Shorty in the background?
Absolutely.
What better than that? Anyway, Bruce Feldman's great. Great to catch up with him. But college football will be back next week, kind of the following week, full-fledged. You'll be checking out Stanford Stephen the Bear podcast, getting all the best stuff there. Watching us, hopefully, for some winners on SportsCenter. Steve giving some picks there. And, you know, hopefully we'll hand out a little bit of candy.
Sounds good.
And, you know, come back and see us next week, all right?
Yes, sir.
Don't let the inmates run the asylum. Who's the boss? Me. Daddy's the boss. Say
that's been said enough.
I'm the boss. There you go. All right.